on now. So thoughts do have their value, but they also get in there in the way. They get in the way of experience, and I think I mentioned that image in the orientation of trying to feel a fur coat or anything else for that matter with gloves on does not work. So that's kind of the role that thoughts typically play in terms of our way of experiencing. They get in the way of experience, or as Rinpoche presents it here, they cover over space. And those two things we're treating as more or less equivalent. So what Rinpoche says is that we really, if we want to challenge that, if we want to get back to more direct experience or to the openness of space, we need to explore thoughts. So, you know, another alternative would be to say, well, let's just stop thinking, you know, and then we're back in immediate experience. But that's not so easy. And in fact, it turns out that thoughts are very, are really maybe more pervasive than we imagine. So even if we tried that approach, we might kind of fool ourselves into thinking that we had no thought experiences, when in fact we were just having more subtle kinds of thought experiences. So Rinpoche suggests the alternative approach, which is that we need to understand thoughts. We need to kind of, you could say, take control of thoughts. But that's not quite the right way to say it. But, you know, there's that famous quote by Mark Twain in The Weather. He says, everybody talks about the weather, but nobody does anything about it. And thoughts are kind of like that. You know, you could say everybody's aware that of thinking a lot, or you know, for most people, if we look in our experience, that's what it seems to be like. But we don't do anything about it. We don't have any way of cutting through that experience. Now, meditation, in certain kinds of meditation, is a way of doing something about that. But we want to do it in a more direct way. We'd like to be able to kind of go into the control room or go backstage, you know. So if you think of thoughts as being these actors who pop up on stage and say their lines or put on their costumes or whatever they do, and we're out in the audience appreciating, kind of, you know, maybe appreciating, maybe being bored, whatever it is. But we would like to be backstage, or we'd like to be the directors, or, you know, we'd like to do something a little bit more creative and take responsibility for our experience in a different way. So that's the basic approach that we're going to be exploring in the next weeks, is how we can really investigate the thinking, the activity of thinking, with the intention of being able I keep finding the words take control, and that's not quite right, but being able to take a more responsible relationship to our thoughts. So the second paragraph, which we looked at last week, when you know Rinpoche starts to describe the thinking process, and the first thing he says is that thoughts are really, really quick. They just come and go unnoticed, but it seems as though we're almost always thinking. And then he asks, well, why should that be? Because really, thoughts are boring. You know, most of our thoughts, most of the time, are boring in kind of the same sense that, you know, if you were watching cars on a freeway, depending on how you looked, I guess, but for the most part, after a while, you get pretty bored. I mean, there's Chevrolets and Toyotas and Volkswagens and whatever, but after a while, it's just, you know, there goes another car. It doesn't seem like you benefit very much from any of those thoughts going by. He says here they tend to be trivial and repetitive. They recycle the same themes and images. They call up the same memories. They dwell on the same concerns. I'm going to make a little note here to post a cartoon online that's relevant about that. I can do that. Okay. But we know that. We know that thoughts, for the most part, are just not very interesting. They don't seem to advance things. And a lot of the times they're obsessive, right? We just think about the same things over and over and over again. And he has this nice image at the bottom of the page. It's like this refrigerator or some other appliance that you have in your house that's always on. And you never even notice. You don't notice enough to even be bored by it. But if you did, it'd be pretty boring. And then every now and then, like with the refrigerator, sometimes it cycles off. And then you may notice, oh, it's quiet. But usually it's just going on. Or he gives the other image of it being like a nervous gesture, something we do, that we don't even notice ourselves doing. That thinking is like that. So the question is, why do we do all of that? And at the top of page 52, he suggests something. Now, I want to go into that, what he says. But last week in the conversation, the suggestion or the question came up, what's the relationship between thoughts and emotions? Because when we looked at thoughts, somebody was saying it, what they really found was more kind of emotions, attitudes, more than thoughts. And my comment, and I think in the orientation also, was that we wanted to look at that question, what's the relationship between a thought and an emotion, and see if maybe, well, just be ready to explore that. So one possible answer to the question, why do we have all of these thoughts, is to say it seems to be tied into emotions. We're excited about this or worried about that. It's that kind of thing. The answer that Rinpoche gives is a little different. He says that thoughts are related to what he calls the field communique. Let's take a look exactly. He says, in the second half of that first paragraph on page 52, he says, apart from its specific content, a thought considered as an action. So, if somebody says to you, well, what are you doing right now? And you say, I'm thinking. That's what he means by thought as an action. So thought considered as an action aims to conserve and pass on the order given by the interacting presentations of the field communique. And I'll say something about the field communique in just a second, but let's finish the paragraph because it's kind of a remarkable statement. Just as breath sustains the body, so thinking sustains the world that we inhabit. Very interesting. It's if we weren't thinking this reality, that's really what's being said. We say, here's what's going on. We look around, I look around this room, and it's an office, and everything in it has certain associations for me, and there's Venetian blinds, and I can see a little bit of the view through the blinds. And all of that has associations for me, and it all situates me in a world. And really, Rinpoche is saying all of that is a thought. Or at least, if there wasn't a thought component, because there's perception, you could say, but if we weren't kind of making sense out of it, giving it order, and that's part of what thinking does, then we couldn't sustain it. And that is what he means pretty much by field communique. For those of you who haven't looked at the part of the of Dynamics of Time and Space where he talks about the field communique, it's introduced on page 16 of the book. And what he basically says is that whatever our experience is in this moment, it refers back, I'm looking at page 16 now, it refers back to a reality that is more than the sum of its parts. Beyond all particular interactions and all possible communications, there is the field of these interactions, This field steadily communicates its own availability as a field, together with a structure and a patterning that characterizes field operations. That's the field communique. So in a rough way, you could say that's simply the world, the meaningful world that we inhabit at any particular moment.
What page is that on,
Page
Jack? I'm sorry.
six, yeah, sure, page 16.
Thank you.
So, you know, we don't have to go into the details of that. I think it's a very carefully chosen term by Rinpoche, and what he describes there is very interesting to explore, but that's not so much our focus. Our focus for now is just that we're asking what are thoughts for, and Rinpoche says they're in order to sustain and preserve our sense of what's going on, which includes our identity. I'm the one. And it also includes this sense that I inhabit a particular world, a particular field. There's a way things are. And thinking is always, always encouraging, always supporting, always sustaining, as he says, that particular reality. Now, okay, I want to add something here, and then I want us to do a little practice and discuss it. But I want to add to what Rinpoche says about the field communique and about the way that the thoughts sustain it. I want to add something that he doesn't exactly say here, but he does in other places. And that is that the field that we inhabit, let's just say it that way, the field that we inhabit at any particular moment is actually always changing. And so when we have a thought, any thought, there is a that thought has a field that it sustains, but you know, thoughts change radically. In other words, right now I'm thinking about, and in a way I want to say I'm thinking about what I'm going to say next, but actually I think that's not a very accurate description. But let's say I'm thinking about what I'm going to say next. And then let's say for a moment, just for a very quick moment, I think about what's happening after this phone call. It just kind of pops into my head so quickly that I don't even notice it. But, you know, those kinds of things happen. Or let's say you're walking down the street and you're noticing the flowers in the garden to your right, and then you start thinking about going shopping. It's that kind of thing. There are big jumps in our thoughts, and you could say then, I mean, one way to talk about that is that the field is always changing, and so there really are two questions. The reason I'm introducing that idea is that there are two questions. One is, why do we do all this thinking? And Rinpoche gives an answer to that question in terms of sustaining the field, confirming the field communique, or just sustaining our identity. You could also say it that way. But there's a second question, which is a different question, which is, why do our thoughts change so much? I mean, why don't we just have one way things are? You know, here I am, here we are, we're doing this phone call, and so I'm having various thoughts connected with that, and they sustain that reality, let's say. But then my mind wanders off, or it goes somewhere else. You know, we have one of the expressions we use is I space out. And I think what that basically means is I enter a different space. You know, I enter a different field, a different reality. And so that's the second question. Why do we think so much as the first? Why do we just keep thinking? Why this stream of thoughts? And why do our thoughts jump around from one reality to another? That's the second. So asking the question why in terms of coming up with a theory, you know, the first question, Rinpoche does have kind of a theory, and it's based on some of the earlier parts of the book. He says it's to sustain the field communique. The second question, why do we jump from one field to another? If we ask that why question, we may come up with a theory, but if it's just a theory or a speculation, that's not so helpful. So what I want to suggest is that when we take a few minutes now to look at the thinking process, we keep the focus just on being aware of how the mind jumps from one field to another, how thoughts jump from one field to another, without trying to worry too much about what's going on. Tina is asking, am I saying feel or field? And Rinpoche in this book actually does talk at times about feel of the field, the feel of the field. But in this case, I'm talking about field. I'm definitely talking about field with a D. So, as in field communique. So, what we want to do is look at how thoughts jump around. And then I want to ask one more question. And that has to do, that question is, what counts as a thought? If I have an image of something, is that a thought? If words come into my mind, is that a thought? If I have a thought, maybe there are thoughts that are not images and also not words. So that's also a background question. Now, there's two ways to explore questions like this. If we're going to take a few minutes now to do that. There's two ways to explore questions like this. One is to try to explore them or to explore them as you're thinking. And that's actually, you're going to get the most interesting results if you do that. But it's also difficult because thoughts, as we talked about a little last week, have their own content. And the content kind of pulls us in. It has a kind of gravity. And then we lose our awareness of the thinking process. So it may be that that's difficult to do. There is another way to ask the question, which is if you notice that have been thinking about something, you were lost in a thought, now you come back, just try to look back. So you can look in the moment or you can look back. That's all I'm saying. In the immediate experience, or retrospectively. So we want to be able to discuss this a little, and so we're going to take a few minutes, and those are the two sets of questions. One is just to be aware of how the field changes, how we jump from one thing to another, and the other is to be asking the question, what counts as a thought? Is it words? Is it images? Is it something else? Do those all count as thoughts? So those are the questions, and then we'll take about 5 minutes to look into this, okay? Okay. Okay. So why don't you take a minute to kind of reflect back on what you were noticing? Maybe think about what you'd like to share. Maybe I've been encouraging you to keep a journal, maybe make a few notes to yourself. And then we'll open it up for discussion. Okay, so what did you notice? Would anybody like to say anything about their experience?
I could. Michael?
Okay, so that was, is that Michael?
I can do the echo. Maybe I should be quiet. I'm not sure what's happening
I can hear you.
here. Oh, okay. I had the impression that the field communicated actually like a whole bunch of different planes. Like one is a phone call, then you set us loose to kind of be on our own. It's like I become more aware of the sounds in the houses, and what I felt was that whatever plane of reality I think I'm in, I need to orient myself within it. And it's kind of a war between feeling claustrophobic within a plane, in which case I look outside and want to have something bigger, or I'm just trying to concentrating on rooting myself within a reality. But in all cases, I'm reaching out for kind of a place for myself to feel established and connected.
And do you think that do thoughts play a role in doing that? Are they part of your arsenal for feeling connected or not?
Yes, like thoughts are the spider's way of weaving a web,
The spider's way of
which I wish I
weaving a
could
web.
feel myself supportive in.
Yeah, that's a nice, it's an interesting image because you could say is the, one of the interesting things about spiders and webs that I've noticed is if you knock down a spider's web and the spider's on it and it starts to fall, it's spinning a web as it's falling. It's catching itself as it's falling, and thoughts seem to be kind of like that. They're always it's just so fast, we can always catch ourselves with the next thought, even as the first one is collapsing, something like that. Okay, great. Somebody else was going to say something.
At me, I noticed that there's an
Are
echo.
you talking?
I was noticing that.
I wait. I wait. Are you talking about the
I'm
technical
talking about
fact?
right now. There's an echo.
Okay.
No, yeah. Okay, but what I noticed is that thought is just like Rinpoche said, in the background, it's constant. But I also noticed a presence that was pushing through the thoughts, if that makes any sense. But even though the presence was very strong, the thoughts still came about the presence. And the echo is driving me nuts.
I'm sorry.
The spider thought.
Can you mute your?
Make sure everything you say is worth repeating.
Wait, I got a
Having
little
you
lost
listen.
there. Okay, so Tina, you were saying that you noticed
Anyway, in the present,
okay.
there's an expansion of freedom. It's a freer space. And of course, that's where I'm able to tap into that joy and that kind of thing. So anyway, there you go.
Okay, well, so there's thoughts and then there's something that's deeper than thoughts is roughly what you're saying, it seems like.
Seems to be.
Okay. Anybody else want to say anything? I'm going to share something I was noticing. When we started with that with that practice, I was feeling very, I don't know. I was feeling kind of agitated. I guess that's the best way to say it. And gradually over time, you know, it was only a few minutes, but over time, things started to relax a little. And what that actually meant, it wasn't, I wasn't going to a place like what you were describing, Tina, of something perhaps deeper than thought or some kind of presence that wasn't so much connected with thought. It was still going kind of from thought to thought, but I was able to relax within a thought more. And it became more of a whole situation or a whole field. In the beginning, it was kind of like the thoughts were moving so quickly. They were kind of mirroring this background agitation that I couldn't even settle into a thought. It was like before I even got to one thought, the next one was there. So that I'm basically just sharing my experience, I think. Anybody else want to say anything? I'm fiddling around with the controls a little in case I start looking a little green. Anybody else? Okay, well, I want to give us a another practice. I want to give you another practice, I guess. And I didn't explore just now the question of you know, what counts as a thought. Whether thoughts have to be words or whether they can be images or whether they can be something else, that's as detailed as I want to get in terms of possibilities, those three possibilities, at least for now. But I want to give you a practice that involves generating a particular thought. And for my purpose, I'm going to assume that a thought can be an image. So just in case there's somebody who finds that a totally bizarre idea, if I say to you, think of your mother, for most of you, that's probably going to just immediately bring an image to mind, right? Maybe not everybody, but for most of you. And so that's kind of my quick evidence for the notion that thoughts can be images. So in this case, I want you to work with a particular image, which is a thought. I'm saying this is a thought. We can look at it. Maybe you come to the conclusion that it's not. And the image is a very simple one. I basically tried to come up with as simple an image as I possibly could. And that is an orange sphere. An orange ball. So, just for a moment now, why don't we close your eyes and just imagine that in front of you is an orange ball. I don't care how big it is. Okay, that's it. That's the whole thought. Now, you could play with that ball. You could make it bigger or smaller, you could make it brighter or dimmer, you could make it more dense, you could move it around, you can do this with your eyes open or your eyes closed. I'm just saying, let's make that our thought. So I want the reason I'm trying to do a simple thing like this is so that everybody has the same thought to work with. And the thought is simply an image of an orange ball. So what I'd like you to do during the next week, in addition to just looking at this question of how thoughts arise and the nature of thoughts, and just in general looking into your ordinary thinking patterns, but from time to time, and you can set aside a period of time if you like, or you can do it while you're walking down the street, that's fine too. Just bring to mind this image, this thought of an orange ball. And then see if if you like, as I say, you can change the image in some way. You can change the color if you like, but I guess I'd like you to stay with an orange ball. But you can see, can you go inside the orange ball? Can you make it disappear? Can you bring it into your heart? Can you balance it on your elbow? Whatever you want to do with this orange ball. Right, can you eat it? And then what? Then what? Okay. So that's it. The thought of an orange ball. That's a second assignment or an additional assignment for this coming week. So let's look at that, and by all means, feel free to comment on what you're noticing during the week online, and we'll talk next week.